Celebrating 30 years on Utah's airwaves, Western Life Radio thanks you for joining us around the campfire and for your ongoing support to Utah's longest-running home, garden, travel, and outdoor adventure program. You can always join us on our online campsite at westernliferadio.com.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plotto and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then, hey! The dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock, and it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Connect with the world through Rise Broadband and stay in touch with all things important to you and your family. Known as the number one fixed wireless internet provider in the United States, Rise Broadband will keep you connected with work, school, shopping, and entertainment. Whether you live in a suburban or rural area, Rise helps keep you and your family connected with the people and things that you value most. Rise Broadband offers flexible packages designed to meet your budget so you can enjoy all your favorite music and movies with fast, reliable, in-home Wi-Fi. Stream your favorite shows, play the hottest games without buffering, and stay in touch with family and friends. Get more for less with Rise Broadband. To check availability in your area, visit risebroadband.com or call 844-411-RISE.
When carrying a firearm, always treat it as if it were loaded. Always keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you're ready to fire. Never let your muzzle point at anything you're not willing to destroy. And always be sure of your target, its environment, and any other safety hazards. This announcement's been brought to you by TaylorGunsmithing.com.
Discover the magic within Utah State Parks with an annual State Parks Pass. From boating and fishing to hiking, camping, and off-highway vehicle adventures, Utah State Parks offers a wide variety of activities in the great outdoors. An annual State Park Pass opens the gate to year-round adventures at an amazing price. The annual State Park Pass provides day-use access for you and your family. In addition, Utah State Parks opens the gate to cultural and historical parks where you can learn more about Utah's rich heritage. And don't forget to reserve your favorite campsites year-round with options in teepees, yurts, and hammocks in addition to the standard tent and RV options. Visit the trailhead for more information at stateparks.utah.gov.
I'm Governor Spencer Cox. We live in an incredible state, and this time of year, my family and I, we love to ride. Unfortunately, we've had too many fatalities this year. And while safety equipment is critical, it's not enough. Remember to always be aware of your surroundings and never ride beyond your capabilities. We want to make sure that you make it home safe. And never forget, nobody is invincible.
Faster Utah is proactive about school safety. For more information, fasterutah.org.
Summer has officially begun, and Sportsman's Warehouse has everything you need for your next outdoor adventure. From hiking to camping to shooting, ready for some fishing? Sportsman's Warehouse has all the rods, reels, baits, and nets you need for success. And hunting season will be here before you know it, so bring in your bows for free tune-ups. The best part of all is that at Sportsman's Warehouse, you'll find knowledgeable people who are passionate about what they do, and they will get you just what you need. Sportsman's Warehouse. Take it outside.
Play safe on the water. In Utah, youth 12 to 17 must pass an approved safety class prior to operating personal watercraft on Utah waters. Classes are offered statewide. Register now or get more information by calling 801-538-BOAT. Visit stateparks.utah.gov. This message brought to you by the Utah State Parks Boating Program.
Kindness. It's a single smile, a thoughtful word, a small, unexpected gesture. Whatever the act may be, it's something we call kindness. Yet sometimes in such a chaotic world, people forget the power that kindness holds. Kindness can brighten a moment, lift someone's spirits, turn a bad day into a good story. Kindness can make someone's week, or month, or year. Kindness can restore faith in humanity, and some say it can even make us healthier. All with a simple, small, perhaps unseen or anonymous act. So, think about this. What would happen if a small act of kindness sparked another small act of kindness, and then another, and another, and another? What if kindness became contagious, and all the small gestures done by many would make an impact felt around the nation, around the world? Imagine that power. And all it takes is one kind act a day.
Joins us once again with Utah's Best Gardening. Now, the honey you're going to be getting is actually one of the ingredients that makes some pretty good root beer. And one thing we wanted to talk about today is growing your own root beer. Plants that we can grow here in Utah that can help make your own personal root beer.
Yeah, this one is interesting. Give you a heads up, guys. We kibitzed on this a couple days ago. We haven't talked to each other about it. The idea came up, and we're kind of running with it now. Brian's got me at a disadvantage. He's made homemade root beer before, and we're not talking about going in and buying an extract. I believe you actually put together your own original root beer recipe from natural scratch ingredients, correct?
We did. Yes, we did. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I haven't done that yet. So Brian here is the one that knows it in this segment. And then you got me, and I'm just hanging along and just hoping not to look bad as we talk about it.
It's a fun thing to do. Extracts are cool. I mean, we're in the heat of the summer. Making your own root beer with dry ice and getting A&W extract or the Hires extract, great thing. You can't beat it on the 4th of July. But growing ingredients yourself, putting them together, using your own honey as a sweetener, it's a fantastic thing to do, and it is a lot of fun. And growing your own plants for it can include things that you would probably be considering weeds anyway. Burdock root was one of the first things that surprised me as a traditional root beer recipe.
Yeah, I'd forgotten that was a part of it. But yeah, a lot of them have the burdock root. And now I need to make some. I mean, I'm going to look bad. But anyway, this is actually something we've kind of batted around for at least a year. And the challenge of getting a root beer flavor in a state where the most important flavoring is actually really hard to come by. Traditionally, root beer is going to be mostly based on sassafras root. Secondarily, you will have wintergreen. That's what I would have called the third one. But none of those grow well here.
No, they don't. My son started some sassafras, and it's got a leaf on it or two. It's hanging in there. We've tried wintergreen before, and it does not like this area at all.
The alkaline soils will put that in agonizing misery very quickly. and our lack of humidity. Now, we're not talking about, oh, yeah, I can just water the area and that'll take care of it. It'll get enough water. Yeah, it'll get enough water to the roots, but a lot of these plants need humidity in the air. We haven't got it. Now, the main flavor, chemically speaking, is saffron oil. And that's, of course, what you're smelling in the root beer is the saffron compound in your sassafras. And these crops we've been talking about have saffron. Well, the only thing that I know of right offhand that grows in Utah that's got saffron in it is basil.
Basil? I've never considered basil.
Now, basil, we typically think of a savory plant. If mine does well out in my garden this year, I'm improving my garden, and unfortunately that's throwing the water into chaos because I haven't quite got everything done yet. Of course, my garden's not chaotic. I probably won't be happy with it. But anyway, I will actually try a little bit of sweetened basil to see how that flavor comes across, because there's other components in basil that are going to make it a much different experience than traditional root beer, or at least I suspect. Maybe I'm wrong. But I've also thought, just because saffron is the traditional flavor doesn't mean that it's got to be the base flavor, because there's a lot of those flavors in the mint family, which is the family basil is in, and Nepeta and Agastache and, well, mint. There's a lot of those that do have some echoes of that sassafras taste that may actually make a good original, but still something that you would still recognize as root beer, even if you were just handed it. You'd go, oh, wow, that's root beer, but boy, that's different. And I think that your basil, your Nepeta or Catmint, which we've already mentioned in this episode, your Agastache, I think those are three that you really need to look forward to if you're going to make a local root beer project come together. Now, this is something that's some pretty heavy experimentation here. Now, I know most of you guys don't know this, but Brian has a past. He's got a nefarious past, and he actually is a food scientist in hiding. I've blown your cover, Brian. I've blown your cover.
Oh, no.
The food mafia now knows where you're at, Brian. Your days are numbered. You should have paid me that bribe. So when you mix those flavors, again, you can come up with something that's really different, that's really original, but that's still recognizable. And that's the challenge that we've been discussing for, I don't know how long. It's been at least a year, but it might have been longer than that. Can we do a root beer that's good, grown with stuff that's all available locally in our yards and gardens?
I think there's a lot of ingredients you can get there. The wintergreen note has been the one that's been eluding me a little bit for local sources. Basil is something I had not considered. It does have those notes.
And the other thing that grows here, there is one more that grows here, and that's going to be your birch, because birch has got saffron in it.
Yeah, birch trees, if you can tap the sap.
If you can tap it. Now, birch trees used to be common when Brian and I were kids, but they do not do as well here as they used to. It's just a very harsh environment, and we have distinctly been warming up in Utah for the last 30 years that I've been tracking. And so birch trees are not nearly as common as they used to be, and they're shorter lived than they used to be. We do, however, have a native birch. That would be western water birch. Now, it is not used a lot in the landscape. I don't know how good its sap is for flavoring. I don't have access to one readily right now, but one of these years I will, and I will at least cut a limb out during sap season and try that stuff directly, because you can get a little bit of sugar water out of a tree if you ask her nicely and cut in the right spot during the right season.
Box elder is another one where you can tap, I understand. My son was going to tap. We had a rogue one growing in our area, and We missed the window. He was busy with midterms or something with school, so he wasn't able to get to that one. But
yeah, wasting his life on education. How dare he?
That's another possibility, too. It's supposed to have some of those maple notes to it.
Yeah, and as we talk about this, when I make a root beer from scratch, I'm not going to want it to taste like A&W or Hires or Barks. That's not why you do this. You go in there to do something that is root beer-ish enough that you feel good it's root beer, but is custom and personal and close to home. And you look at any of your maple trees that I know of, if they have a trunk that's 10 inches in diameter, they're tappable. I don't know of a single maple tree that's not, unless it doesn't actually get to that size. So you get that 10-inch trunk, and you can do a Norway maple. You can do a red maple, you can do a silver maple, you can do your autumn blaze maple if it survived that long. You can do any of these maples as long as they're big enough. The biggest difference that you're going to find is that they have about half the sugar that a proper sugar maple or black maple have. They just don't have the same amount of sugar. Other than that, they're very similar, and most people probably couldn't tell the difference, and perhaps even experts would be hard-pressed to tell the difference. But with being less sugar, you have to put more energy into boiling it down to get it to that density that makes maple syrup work. Now, if you happen to be using this for root beer, you're going to have to do some figuring out of how much sugar you've got in there, and how liquid you actually want this, because you may not want to burn off all the water. You may want to do something else. Probably if I were using it for the sweetener, I'd go ahead and use a properly finished maple syrup, but that may not be what you're trying to do. That's where it gets tricky on this level of brewing, is you have to know what you're looking for, and you have to be skilled enough to get to that point, or at least pick up the skills as you go.
For that same birch note, if you don't have a tree to tap, birch bark is oftentimes used as part of that mix. And a lot of people aren't aware of this, but what you're doing is essentially making a tea, and then you're carbonating it. So you make the tea, you brew it up like you would a peppermint tea or something, with all the different spices and herbs and everything, and all of the different ingredients. Let it sit there for a while, let those flavors extract, strain those guys off, and then you will go to the carbonation step and sweeten as needed, sweeten as desired. Sometimes some of these ingredients do not taste great on their own. Root beer in general is usually more cups of sugar than any other beverage out there, except for a couple. It's pretty sweet for a reason. It was originally done as a remedy or a spring tonic, and the sugar really helps it go down.
Yeah, and that's a good point on the sugar. I mentioned before that I'm borderline diabetic, and I can do without a lot of the sugar per se. Problem is, what sugar does for our food in improving the flavor, the palatability, the texture, even if it's a fairly unrecognizable amount of sugar, is incredible. If you were to remove processed sugar, and that would include maple syrup and honey, anything that's got a high level of pure sugar in it. If you were to remove that from our food, it would not only kill the sweet teeth, but everything else that comes with the benefits of the sugar is incredible. And so when you get to the point in your life when you've overdone it for enough years that you're like me, the sweet can be hard to give up, but the texture and everything else that comes with it is actually really hard to do without, because everything has it. We grew up with it. Even if we ate well, there is so much sugar in our diets. By eat well, I mean healthy, that when you transition out of it, you find yourself lacking. I mean, how can you do a sugar-free gingerbread?
Be hard. Be really hard.
You can't, because the basis, the core of that cake is the molasses. Yeah, you can put an artificial sweetener in there, and you can make it taste okay. But the spices don't blend right, the nutmeg and the cinnamon. and the ginger don't work right without sugar. It blends the flavors. Your sugar source is your coloring for the cake. Beyond just the sweetness, the flavoring of it is reliant on that sugar-containing substance. And how do you get that flavor without the sugar? I have tried, and I haven't figured it out. One of these years, I may grow some beets and try grinding those down, but it's hard. So when you're doing your root beer, that sugar in there blends the flavors, and it allows them to reach their fullest capacity. And I don't know exactly the science on this, but the sugar enhances those flavors, and again, it helps them blend. So if you're trying an artificial sweetener, something nice and sweet, your body can tell the difference, but even worse than that is your seasonings and your flavorings and your spices will not come together properly. And that drives me nuts because I really would like to make some homemade root beer, but when I do it, I'll try it, and then I've either got to give it away or it's going to sit on the shelf forever because it'll kill me.
Take it in small doses.
You should see how I do chocolate. Anyway, very small. As a side note, Hershey's has actually made a fairly decent sugar-free chocolate to any of you people that are suffering. Non-endorsement, just reality. Okay.
Molasses is a good sweetener. Honey is a good sweetener. Granulated sugar are the best three sweeteners, usually, in these recipes.
You don't want to go get some high fructose corn syrup down at the local supermarket?
A lot of people are used to it right now. You could if you wish. Premium root beers always seem to brag about the real sugar.
You'd have a hard time finding high fructose corn syrup available in your local supermarket. They do sell corn syrup, but it's not high fructose corn syrup. So you actually couldn't. You could try. But if anyone carries it in a supermarket, I would be astonished because it's just not used in home cooking.
All right, then. Let's take a quick break. Be back in a few minutes. When we return, we'll continue talking about making your own root beer with Mr. Alex Grover with Utah's Best Gardening. Stick around. More fun is on the way here on Western Life Radio. Explore the universe from one of Utah's dark sky parks. With more than 14 state park destinations to choose from, your family can gaze at the Milky Way, watch the moonrise, or make a wish during a meteor shower. With the right telescope, you can find nearby planets, tour distant galaxies, or capture the heavens with your own deep space photography. Your adventure begins with a camping reservation and a clear view to the darkened skies. Launch your epic nighttime adventure at stateparks.utah.gov.
Don't let your next family outing end in tragedy. Don't drink and ride. Driving an OHV under the influence of alcohol is no different than driving your car under the influence of alcohol. Law enforcement officers will be out checking riders and operators of OHVs. You could end up seeing jail time, loss of driver's license, the same stiff penalties that apply to operating a car. This message is from the Utah Division of Parks and Recreation. Ride responsibly.
Put on your helmet, let's go.
But Mom, when will I be old enough so I don't have to wear my helmet? When will I become invincible just like you?
Sweetie, I'm not invincible. I need my helmet too. Anyone can get hurt, no matter how old they are.
Be responsible and set an example when you ride. Accidents do happen. Please remember, nobody is invincible.
Play safe. Boating accidents happen quickly. You never know when you might end up in the water. Wear your life jacket and have a throwable life preserver on board. Remember, Utah boaters wear it. call 801-538-BOAT. Visit stateparks.utah.gov. This message brought to you by the Utah State Parks Boating Program.
Choose your adventure. With 46 state parks and an impressive list of recreational opportunities.
Yes, bass fishing at Sand Hall State Park.
Visitors might have a hard time choosing what to do each weekend.
Woo! Windsurfing at Deer Creek State Park.
Choose your adventure. Explore Utah and create memories at Utah State Parks. For campground reservations, ideas for your next adventure, or to purchase an annual pass, stop by stateparks.utah.gov. Summer has officially begun, and Sportsman's Warehouse has everything you need for your next outdoor adventure. From hiking to camping to shooting, ready for some fishing? Sportsman's Warehouse has all the rods, reels, baits, and nets you need for success. And hunting season will be here before you know it, so bring in your bows for free tune-ups. The best part of all is that at Sportsman's Warehouse, you'll find knowledgeable people who are passionate about what they do, and they will get you just what you need. Sportsman's Warehouse, take it outside.
Now back to Western Life Radio with your host, Brian Brinkerhoff.
Welcome back to Western Life Radio. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff, host of this program. We have Mr. Alex Grover with us with Utah's Best Gardening. Now, a real strong base note to a good root beer is vanilla. If you get a good quality vanilla note to it, that usually is a good foundation for a lot of today's root beers.
That's interesting because I've been working on different projects, and I'm going to say that if you want to put a really good effect on any drink, I make homemade cider, and by cider I mean an alcoholic beverage, and I've been kind of playing around with it, and when I dump just a little bit of extract in there, it very much does change the flavor. It gives it the taste that you begin to associate with cream soda, is that vanilla. So I think you really got a good point there, is your vanilla is a very important characteristic, and it will enhance that root beer quite a bit, because that's part of the flavor we're looking for, is that sense of a cream drink, a cream. And that's what vanilla does to a sweet drink.
Kind of just richens it up and brings it all together. The type of vanilla you choose makes a big difference too, but it's a good foundation flavor note to start with. And we talked before, sarsaparilla, sassafras, and wintergreen kind of are the three flavor notes, the trifecta of flavors that a lot of root beers are touting as their main flavor notes.
And that's one thing, I think the challenge that makes it so fun is we don't have access to those in Utah as a grown item. Of course, we also don't have access to homegrown vanilla in Utah either. That's Utah grown, I should say, to Utah grown vanilla. So if we're going to throw the vanilla in there, I mean, we've already kicked it out of the state and out of the country, though, haven't we?
Unfortunately, that's true. And ginger can be brought in. That's another flavor note that's brought into a lot of these. You can grow your own ginger here, though. We've done that.
Yeah, certainly as a house plant, it can be grown, and take it out in the nice summer months, it can be grown. I've not done that one yet. I'm feeling like I've missed something in my life.
You need to do it. Just get one from the store, drop it in the ground. The ones we did, it made some really beautiful pink flowers. I was really shocked to see the flowers being pink.
Yeah.
They're really fun. Sterling loved growing those and digging them up in the fall, and they produce quite well if you get them started early in the spring.
Yeah, that one's a good one. Now, the one thing I kind of wonder about at times, the flavoring substance in vanilla that we associate most with vanilla is called vanillin. And your artificial vanilla that's made either as a byproduct of the pine industry, or it can be made through petroleum magic. You're the scientist here. I'll let you figure out how to explain how that's done. But as I talk about the stuff that's in the pine industry, that's in the paper industry, there are vanilla flavorings, or vanilla-like flavorings at least, in some of our pines. one of the ways that we identify a ponderosa pine is to go smell its trunk. And it will generally have a very strong smell. Depending on the person, the time, and the tree, will either be vanilla or it's going to smell like pineapple. One of those two. I haven't figured that out yet. There are times in its life when an Austrian pine will have a vanilla smell. And so what I speculate is that there are some of these pine trees where you may be able to get that vanilla smell through barks or leaves or some other source like that, but I've never tried it to prove it one way or the other.
Sterling has done that. He's actually gathered pine buds early in the spring, about now, a little bit earlier maybe. He puts them in a syrup and then lets them extract, and man, it's really tasty stuff.
Yeah, now, I haven't done that, but I haven't had time yet, but I do make spruce beer. It's a low alcohol. It's similar to the people who will make root beer and carbonate it with yeast. So generally, I'm leaving a lot of sugar in there. I'm only letting it stay out long enough to really get some carbonation, but not really alcohol. And there's a little bit of alcohol. But again, it's like homemade root beer. It's the same concept. And if you do homemade root beer, it would be the same here. And I'll tell you what, that spruce beer is one of my favorites. Yes, it's homemade, and I really appreciate that. But there's just a special taste to that that's almost citrusy, but not almost vanilla-y, but not. And almost a lot of things, but not. But it's really good all by itself. And I would love to use that as part of a root beer mix. Again, not a lot. It would need to be very weak because that spruce can be a very powerful flavor and could really overpower something very easily. But just a touch of that seems to me like it could be a good addition to the right combination of other flavors for a root beer.
Good idea. I hadn't considered that. That makes really good sense. Root beer, we're talking roots. We talked about burdock root, dandelion root is used often, and then again the ginger root. So those are three roots that are commonly used.
Very commonly used. And that's an area where I would like to see more done here. I think there are probably other roots that may even be unique to the western U.S. that we don't talk about that may just work. Don't know yet, though. That's one thing that I found in the western U.S. is we've done a very poor job of accessing our botanical heritage and turning it into stuff that we will use on a regular basis. Most of our foods are imported. Most of our plants are imported. We don't really pay a lot of attention to what grows around us. Now, in my garden, I've got one of these herbs that we've talked about a little bit. Agastache, it's known as like half a dozen different common names. But some of the varieties, in particular the rupestris, Agastache rupestris, is known as root beer mint. Now, it's got no safrole in it. I checked on that one. I haven't had a chance to check all the constituents in the other plants because this is an obscure branch of knowledge. But for some reason, Agastache is actually fairly well studied on that. No safrole, but they do have some really great flavorings that cover a lot of territory. And I'm telling you, one of these days, I'm going to make root beer from that and that alone, just to see how it'll turn out. Now, there are other varieties of Agastache. Some of them are better than others. Some of them kind of have bitter leaves, a little bit of bitterness. Others don't. But your rupestris is one that I would definitely look at doing. The biggest problem with that is it has small leaves, so it's actually fairly hard to get enough to process effectively. It's just got such a small leaf, you have to have a lot of leaves to go where you're going with it. But the other thing, I talk about the rupestris, there's a common, very common in our mountains, Agastache, and Agastache urticifolia. Basically, it resembles stinging nettle a lot. That's where it gets its name from. So gosh, I can't even think what the common name is. It's not a plant that most people realize is there, but certainly if you're going up into the middle elevations in Utah County, you're going to find a lot of that. If any of you have gone and done the Stuart Falls hike, it's all along the Stuart Falls hike. And that's funny because I talk about it being stinging nettle leaf type plant, and I misidentified it when I first saw it as stinging nettle. It's very cautious. Agastache was mostly this great herb, just growing there native, doing its thing.
Chocolate mint is oftentimes used in these recipes.
Yeah, now that's interesting on the chocolate mint, because chocolate mint is a peppermint. And peppermint is a cross between two species, and I can't think of the names of them right now. And the chocolate, most experts will say that they can't detect any chocolate flavor. But anytime you start sticking a name on a flavor or on something like that and saying it's got that taste to it, we have a tendency to just accept that. And our brain, whether we do it consciously or not, says, oh, yeah, chocolate mint. I can taste the chocolate right here. I've tasted it enough. I've got some outside. I can taste what the element is that people will say that they think it's chocolate. I don't feel it's chocolate, but for some reason it does associate well with that. So that's an interesting thing. It's just a different crossing of these two other mints, and it's basically a peppermint. It's also got a really nice color, I might add. But yeah, I hadn't thought of that one, but I would be, in the right amount, I would be really excited to see how that turns out. I think that would be really good.
Yeah, and it's a little bit of a balancing act to get all the flavors in the right balance, so it's a lot of playing to get it right. There are recipes online, folks, if you are interested in doing that. You can find those. You can find YouTube videos if you're wanting to get a jump start on it. And then probably easiest, start with what you can find. You can purchase a lot of those dried ingredients online. You just basically make a tea out of it and then cool it down. And then you add your sugar, your sweeteners, whatever you want to taste. And then carbonate it with dry ice or however you want to carbonate it.
Yeah, and I'm going to say, if you're going to try making your own root beer and you're not going to use an extract, go with a known recipe first. This is not to say that you shouldn't experiment further with it, but by doing a known recipe, you will develop a skill set of how to do it right in the first place. Because if you do really horrible at doing all the tasks, and your root beer the first time turns out horrible because you decided to do it from scratch with your own recipe and everything else, it might be horrible because your recipe was bad. It might be horrible because you're just not very good at doing the root beer yet, going through the process of making it, steeping it, being aware of what it's supposed to taste like and how it's supposed to react. Those things are invaluable. So generally speaking, I really think that you would be wise to step away from experimenting like we're talking about until you've actually made it a couple of times so you can develop the skills you need to have a really good experience.
I have to agree. Build yourself some confidence. It's frustrating to just jump in not knowing what you're getting and have these grandiose visions of what this is going to be, the best tasting root beer ever, and then find out it tastes really bad. Start with another one, and keep your expectations low to get started with. It won't be what you're buying from the store. It's not using high fructose corn syrup. You can sweeten it, but sometimes it takes a little bit of imagination. It's not going to be your typical root beer, unless you're using typical ingredients, which aren't always available here.
Yeah. You and I are wonks. We just love doing the weird stuff, and we have lots of really interesting backgrounds. And that makes it a different experience for us. And, of course, I haven't made it yet. So before I make my own variety, I'm going to maybe make a known recipe. But then again, I've got all this Agastache growing outside and made tea with it before. I can sweeten the tea. Okay, you see where I'm going there, is I'm not the guy that follows my own advice. That being said, I do feel like there are exceptions for people like me, but even people like me screw it up and often enough that even if you're an exception, maybe you should go ahead and toe the line for a little bit and learn how to do it first.
I would recommend starting with an extract. Start with an extract,
yeah.
Get a feel for the process, and then work your way to the next step, to the next step, to the next step. After about three or four times, then you feel enough confidence doing that, then you start playing with your own ingredients and then come up with what you like and what you don't like. And I would recommend trying different flavors, too. Get a feel, because not everybody likes all flavors, and get a feel for the range and kind of decide what you like and what you don't.
Yeah, and one of the things I really look at, too, is a lot of the stuff I have in my garden. I've got currently three varieties of Agastache. I say varieties, they're actually three different species. I've got my Nepeta, my cat mint. I've got that chocolate mint, which I need to move to a different spot. It's had an unfortunate event this year and is now invading my entire herb garden. And then, so I've got some of this stuff right here. And before I get too excited about actually making a recipe, I make these into teas to try them first. Okay, this is what my apple mint tea tastes like. Take notes on the dosage and how long I steeped it and everything. Okay, this is what my Agastache Rupestris or my root beer mint tastes like. Okay, this is how much I used. Take down notes. And this is just straight trying each of these plants. Oh, here is my next plant that I'm trying. Here's my mint that I'm trying. And going through and processing all of that, by processing, I mean tasting it, being involved with it, taking notes on it so it's replicatable. If you do not take notes on it, you cannot repeat it. Maybe you don't want to repeat it. I get it. Independence and all that jazz. But the number of things that I've lost that I didn't record properly is just high enough. I really don't want to go there again. What was that favorite tomato I got 5 years ago? Gosh, it was an Italian name and I forgot. Okay, well, it's gone. So take notes on what you do. Document the amount you use. Document your procedures. And then you can repeat them. If you don't like it, you can always tweak the procedure and see if it's different. And then you can try these different flavors. And once you've tried them, you'll have a better idea of how to mix them. And we talked about them using weeds like burdock and dandelion root. Those are also things that you should probably try. And you may try them up straight, and you may want to toast them first, because sometimes you get some really nice flavors off of toasting that you just can't get otherwise. You've got to toast that special plant, or it's just not going to be the same. And these are things to experiment with and try, rather than just automatically assuming that anybody can do this. Anybody can do it, I think, but they have to be willing to put the work and the research into it. And people forget that.
And be patient. If it doesn't work out, make small batches. Don't make big batches. If you don't like it, you don't want to throw away gallons of this stuff. You want to make just small, couple pints at the most, if possible.
Yeah. Since I carbonate with actual yeast, usually I kind of have to go with a gallon. But then again, yeast is relatively cheap. I can always use bread yeast, too, while I'm in the experimentation phase. It's about the cheapest yeast you can find, and it'll work. It'll carbonate things. In fact, it's really good at carbonating things. That's why it works for bread.
I used to do that years ago. I remember when I was first getting into root beer making. I was so excited about it, and I thought, man, I'm going to do this. We're going to make this happen. And I was disappointed. I tried the dry ice, and that was okay, but it was relatively flat, and I got frustrated with other types of methods. We tried some other types of carbonation methods, and it didn't push the carbonation in like I wanted. And so I said, you know what? I want good carbonation. There was a place up in downtown Salt Lake, but I think it's closed, but I bought a bunch of root beer bottles from them, and I bought the cleaning stuff and all the supplies there, and cappers, and I was pretty convinced I wanted to get a champagne yeast because I wanted a lot of carbonation in there. I made a first batch, and it was okay. It was all right. Made some nice carbonation in it. Second batch, it took a while. I was got busy with other things, and it was sat around for 6 months. And I thought, man, I don't know. It's been sitting around a while. Maybe it doesn't have as much kick in it as it should. I'm going to double my – I think I doubled or even tripled the amount I was recommended to put in there. And I had them in the basement, and I was upstairs, and I remember hearing some pretty good-sized explosions. And I blew up probably about a dozen bottles of root beer down there. Had to clean up the mess, and the ones that were left, you pull the cap off. I brought them carefully upstairs and pointed them out towards the yard, and I opened the cap, and it shot probably 10, 15 feet away from me. And all that was left at the bottom was just maybe a one sip of the stuff. And since then, I start doing forced carbonation like they do at the soda companies. It's just a lot easier to work with. But it's a fun element to do that with the yeast and everything, because that is how they did it back in Brigham Young's day.
I think anybody who listens to my segments on a regular basis realizes that I'm a little bit of a history nerd. And the way I'm really nerdiest the most is I like learning old ways of doing things. Doesn't mean that that's the best way. It doesn't mean that that's going to have the best results. There's just a certain satisfaction I have of taking it back to a simpler way. Or sometimes it's a more complex way. I'll be honest, sometimes it's not as simple. But it's an older way that brings it to the origin of the process. And for that reason, I really do like doing it the older way. And as far as it goes, if you want a consistent, easy-to-manage process, forced carbonation is definitely a way to go. There's no question. All the commercial companies do it. A lot of very serious home brewers in beer, cider makers. I don't know about champagne, home champagne or bubbly wine, whatever they want to call it. But there's a lot of very serious people who will force carbonate it to avoid the bottle bombs, to have consistency. And just because it's a much easier process to just say, this is what's going to happen and make it happen. If you're doing yeast, there's aspects that are just not going to be predictable enough for you to know that they're going to work. And that's just the way it is. And part of it is learning that. So, yeah, of course, then again, carbonation with yeast is cheaper. So there's trade-offs each way. And that's something that you really need to educate yourself about and then make a decision that meets you, your financial and your lifestyle situations, because none of those are the same. So both of us know that there's different ways of doing it and that you have to work with what's best for you and your conditions, and those conditions can change. If you decide you love making homemade root beer and you start your own company, you're probably going to use forced carbonation because it'll make your life a lot simpler.
Agreed. There's many ways you can do that and enjoy it. It's what fits you, what facilities you have, what tools you want to use, and the angle you want to hit on it. I mean, everyone has a different spin on it, but it is fun. And if summer's a great time to do that, you know, a nice cold beverage you create yourself is just always fun.
There's a really level of satisfaction when you go through the process of learning how to do it, learning how to do it right, and coming up with a good product. You may lose a taste test 9 times out of 10, but there's a certain amount of what you put into that product that you will also get out of it. And it doesn't matter what anybody else likes or doesn't like, whether they like your stuff or think it's a prize winner or not. If you learned how to do it right, if you've done a good job, even if it's not the best job to the rest of the world, it will be the best job to you because of the process you took to get there. A lot of people are very focused on results these days. And I can tell you there are a lot of things in the world that you should do just for the process. I've mentioned I make cider. Oh, I can buy much better cider than I can make. I can buy much better cider. One of these days that may change. But there's nothing quite as satisfying as getting my cider out and giving it a smell, because I may not make the best cider in the world, but my cider is the best smelling cider that I've ever run across. Cider doesn't sell on smell, so they don't care. But I have it, and I enjoy it. And that is a value to my life, is I have this great smelling cider that makes me happy just to smell it.
Connect with the world through Rise Broadband and stay in touch with all things important to you and your family. Known as the number one fixed wireless internet provider in the United States, Rise Broadband will keep you connected with work, school, shopping, and entertainment. Whether you live in a suburban or rural area, Rise helps keep you and your family connected with the people and things that you value most. Rise Broadband offers flexible packages designed to meet your budget so you can enjoy all your favorite music and movies with fast, reliable, in-home Wi-Fi. Stream your favorite shows, play the hottest games without buffering, and stay in touch with family and friends. Get more for less with Rise Broadband. To check availability in your area, visit risebroadband.com or call 844-411-RISE.
Ricky, my man.
Hey, headed out on the lake, I see. These fish aren't going to catch themselves, am I right? Got some brewskis from my broski.
No, thank you. That's illegal.
What? Come on, aren't you the guy that wrestled the buffalo on Antelope Island?
First of all, they're called bison, and I was delivering a breech calf.
Wow, come on, man. I'll trade you this sixer of suds for that life jacket.
A real man always wears his life vest. And he never partakes of alcohol while operating a boat. Everyone knows that.
Yeah, not everybody does.
Everybody knows that.
You got me.
Explore the universe from one of Utah's dark sky parks. With more than 14 state park destinations to choose from, your family can gaze at the Milky Way, watch the moonrise, or make a wish during a meteor shower. With the right telescope, you can find nearby planets, tour distant galaxies, or capture the heavens with your own deep space photography. Your adventure begins with a camping reservation and a clear view to the darkened skies. Launch your epic nighttime adventure at stateparks.utah.gov.
Only in the forest can you see this. And this. And this. But nothing beats the moment you see that.
Cool!
That's your child's eyes opening up to a world of possibilities.
I didn't know it could do that!
Because one trip to the forest can spark a world of difference.
There are some moments only the forest can inspire. Find yours at discovertheforest.org. Learn about forests near you and discover cool things to do when you go, like hiking, canoeing, fishing, or camping. Or create your own adventure with family and friends, and you might just see this. Your moment's out there. Find it at discovertheforest.org. That's discovertheforest.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
If you would like a little more from your range experience than standing and shooting holes in paper, come and train with us, TaylorGunsmithing.com.
And people with stories and dreams through cadence of nature, the wilderness. wilderness beckons. A song of the mountains rings out through the trees. The voice of the backcountry echoes forever. It carries the message, live wild and free. Wild and free. The song of the mountains is calling to me. Western wildlands, discover the backcountry dream.
Folks, you've been listening to Western Life Radio, a 30-year outdoor and Western lifestyle tradition. Thanks for joining us. May all your days be filled with new adventures. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff.